this week, this time period in March has figured prominently in the history and the legacy of our next guest. Yesterday, of course, we had Kelly Rudy on reminiscing about the 26th anniversary of Wayne Gretzky's 802nd career goal, which broke Gordie Howe's record. And tomorrow is the 38th anniversary of his 200th point in the 1981-82 season. Wayne became the first to reach that milestone. He did it four times, remains the only player to have ever reached it. And there are a ton of records Wayne Gretzky has set. And that one, you know, when I watch hockey now and when I take a look at the stats, that one still makes me shake my head every time I see it. Very pleased to be joined by the great one himself, Wayne Gretzky. Wayne, as always, thank you so much for your time. I'll just ask you before we get into the historical aspect of this. You know, we are in the middle of a pandemic right now. What does it look like from where you are?
Well, probably the same as you guys. It's kind of an eerie feeling. Obviously, it's something that nobody saw coming, and this is something that our generation has never seen anything like. So we're all trying to do our part. Our community is pretty much in a lockdown other than getting things that you have to have, but everything is closed, and you know, it's kind of eerie right now. And gosh, I don't think anybody ever thought that this would ever be in our lifetime. But you know what? We're all got to do a small piece, and hopefully, all those small pieces added up to getting rid of this pandemic, and we can go back to somewhat of a normal life, and hopefully. Like everyone, we all stay safe and stay healthy.
You know, Wayne, a lot of us are looking out for our folks right now. Your dad is kind of Canada's dad in a lot of ways. I think a lot of people feel that about Wally. How's he doing, and what are you guys doing to kind of make sure he's doing all right getting through this?
Yeah, you know what? That's our biggest concern. Obviously, like anybody else who's got elderly parents, and elderly parents are battling some sort of scenario, and my dad's battling Parkinson's. So you know what, my sister's got an eye on him, my brothers have got an eye on him. They've pretty much locked him down and locked out the house, and we're trying to keep him like every other elderly person in the world and in Canada safe, and hopefully we can get through this. But it is trying times for everyone, and something that I mean, my goodness, nobody ever saw this coming.
And we certainly wish him the best, Wayne, and for everybody in your world to stay safe. You know, you're one of the few people in the world you could sort of ask this, Wayne. You have you accumulated so many records that I wonder, are there ones in particular that stand out above the rest? Like, does the 802nd career goal moment stand out more, or do they, are they all a little bit of a blur because you own quite so many of them?
Well, I don't mean to laugh, but you know what? I was just playing, and I was lucky I was in the right scenario with a coach that believed in the style of play that I like to play. And I've said this many times before. My goodness, I got to play with some of the greatest players who ever lived, and unselfish. Guys like Mark Messier and, of course, Paul Coffey and Yuri Curry and, you know, the list goes on and on. And so we weren't really, when we were playing, we were just having fun. We practiced every day. I said this to an Edmonton radio station the other day. I mean, my goodness, you couldn't help but get better because we practiced so hard. And every single drill we did, it was my line against Mark Messier's line. And I said, my gosh, how can you not become better when you play against one of the greatest players who ever lived? And so our work ethic in practice was always stellar. Everybody to a man really enjoyed working hard. And I think for the new guys who would come into our organization, that was one of the things that they saw that was a little bit surprising, that we practiced every day and we practiced hard and we were like sponges. We really believed in our coaches and what they were trying to teach us and the system they wanted to play. And we learned from our mistakes. We lost to a better team in the finals in 83, and we learned from what we did wrong in 83 and took it into the next season. But Glenn was a big believer. He played in Montreal and played with some of the greatest players ever, and he played in Boston with the Oilers and the Espositos. And he really believed that at the end of the day, winning the Stanley Cup was most important. But he also wanted to win every trophy. He wanted to win the Hart Trophy. He wanted to win the Art Ross. He wanted to win the Norris. He always felt that even though those were individual awards, they were manufactured by a team concept. So, you know, I was lucky. And then, you know, as far as the records go, listen, if you play in the National Hockey League, it's an honor. And if you can break a record or have a record, it's really truly something special because there's been so many great players. But for me, you know, as my dad always said, records are made to be broken. I remember I was breaking Gordie Howe's record, and I told my dad, gosh, in some ways I feel bad about this. And he said, you know what, he's more proud of it than you are. And when somebody comes along and breaks your record, you make sure you're as gentlemanly as Gordie Howe. And so here we are years later, and Alex definitely has an opportunity. And I've said this before, if he breaks my record, I hope I'm there. I hope I'm the first one to shake his hand because it's great for the game. It's wonderful for the sport, and life goes on. But for me, my favorite record is, no question, 50 goals in 39 games. I got really hot at the end. I think I had 11 goals in the last three games. And so for somebody to get 50 goals in 38 games, I think that'll be the hardest record for somebody to beat.
Wayne, I raised this actually on the show yesterday. We were talking about the records. That, you know, the connection with you and Howe has always intrigued me because he's, you know, he was an old man by the time you started playing. Really, I know he kept playing, and I know you crossed over with him. But he's really kind of two generations removed in some ways. But why Howe for you, and why that connection? Because, you know, like I'm older than you, and I didn't see the best of Howe in the 50s. I'm, you know, none of you have to be a lot older than me even to have seen that.
Yeah. Well, I've probably typically, like every other boy at a young age, you don't like to read a whole lot. But one of the things I love to do is read anything and everything about Gordie Howe. So at a young age, 6, 7, 8, 9, I read probably every Gordie Howe book there was. And I studied him. I used to tease him because I remember being 7 years old and going to a barber shop and asking the barber to cut my hair and give me a Gordie Howe haircut. That's how much I admired him. To this day, the greatest Christmas gift I ever got was the Gordie Howe jersey, number 9 Red Wing. So he just became, you know, the person I idolized. And then I got so lucky at the age of 10, I got to meet Gordie Howe at a Kinsman dinner in Brantford. And I remember my dad said to me, how was Mr. Howe and how did you like the day? And I said, you know what, you put these people on pedestals, and I had Gordie as the greatest person who ever lived. And I said, you know what, when I met him, he was bigger, better, and nicer than I even imagined. And so over time, we developed this friendship, just our paths keep crossing. And when I was 16, I was playing in Toronto for the Young Mats, and his youngest son, Murray, was on the team. And Murray and I became very good friends, and he was living at my agent, Gus Medaille's house. And so we became very good, very close friends. And we used to get on the team bus, and Murray would have all his books, and he'd always say to me, Wayne, you got to bring your books on the road. You got to keep up in your schoolwork. You got to study. And so one time I got on the bus and I had these couple books, and Murray said to me, gosh, good to see you got your books. And I showed him, it was 2 Gordie Howe books. So Murray was studying to be a doctor and I was studying to be a hockey player. But, and then at 17, Jacques Demers was so nice. He picked me to play in the series against the Soviets. And I didn't even think I was going to play. I was kind of an extra guy. I was 17, and I walked in the locker room, and Jacques Demers grabbed me, and he said, you know what, you're going to center the old man and his son. And I remember I almost started crying because I was so nervous. And so we played together in that game, and as time went on, we just stayed friends, and we do charity events in the summertime together. I just always felt like he was so special. And to this day, I always tell people the two greatest players that ever lived were Gordie Howe and Bobby Orr. And what makes our game so great is that they were both good people, and they both passed that on to the next generations. And so I always think of when young guys meet me when I was playing, I always think of when I met Gordie Howe and how impressionable it was to me and how much he respected not only the game but people in life. And Gordie was one of those few guys, You know, it didn't matter if you were standing on the street corner or you're the president of the United States. Gordie Howe could have a conversation. And one of the great thrills of my life was when I was 10 and I got to speak at that awards dinner in Brantford. And years later, I got invited to a similar dinner in Saskatoon. 3,000 people were there. And I called Gordie and I said, listen, and it was a couple of years before he passed and he was getting a little bit older. I talked to him and his son. I said, I want to surprise everybody and fly you in and take care of you and put you up for a couple of days. And I want this to be something really special for the people of Saskatchewan. And so as I got introduced and I walked out and I grabbed the microphone, I introduced Gordie Howe. And it was the greatest ovation other than the 1980 All-Star Game, when he got the ovation that probably would have kept going had the public address announcer not started talking. But he was the best. He was just a great person. I'm so fortunate that I knew him and I knew his family, and just wonderful, wonderful people, and very, very proud Canadian.
I mentioned we had Kelly Rudy on yesterday, and he was talking about that night you got the 800 and second goal and how it was kind of cool seeing Marty McSorley get the assist. And he said, I didn't want to take anything away from Luke Robitaille, but Yari Curry had just jumped in the ice, and he said it would have been so perfect if Yari had been able to get in on that goal as well. And then he started talking about Marty. And, you know, look, Wayne, I covered and watched your teams. I know all about you. I know all about Coffey. Obviously, Messier was great. I loved Yari Curry. But Kelly went on about what a good player Marty turned into. Who on those great teams, Wayne, do we not realize, you know, was good? Who was better than we think they were on that team?
Well, first of all, let me say this about Marty. When he first came to Edmonton, he was horrible. I remember saying this either, what are we doing? Where are we going with this organization? I started thinking, my goodness, Marty used to every single day be an hour on the ice. I'd be leaving the arena and he would still be on the ice. And then after he would get off the ice, the trainers would get him a burger and he'd sit down and he would train and work out. And then he would take his skates and he would go skate on these ponds in Edmonton and lakes and backyard rinks. And he just made himself a hockey player. And I tell young kids all the time, and I tell parents, listen, there's only so many Gordie Howes and Mark Messiers and Mario Lemieux. But Marty McSorley is an inspiration that you can make the NHL if you put the work and the time in. And that's what you have to do. Looking at those teams, and I say this, there were so many good players, but a few of the guys that were unsung heroes, Charlie Huddy and Randy Gregg, those two guys were just mainstay players. Randy Gregg today, 5 Stanley Cups, and he's probably on the front lines. He's a doctor. Just really special players that really fit what we needed for that hockey club. Pat Hughes on the right side. He came from Montreal, didn't play a whole lot, but won a Stanley Cup. Mark Napier, both those guys came in, and they were instrumental in the success of our organization. Craig McTavish, Dave Hunter, and the list, you know, each guy had a defined role. Say there was funny, we have 65 guys at training camp, and, you know, those days, everybody would sit in the room the first day, and Glenn would walk around the room, and most teams would say, hey, every job's up for grabs, and that was such a load of crap. And Glenn would say, there's one spot open, and I'm not sure who's going to get it, but you do what you do best and bring something special to this team, and you're going to make the team. And we had guys like Billy Carroll and guys like Keith Acton that fit that role and were special for our team and guys that we needed to be successful. I remember we traded for Craig Muni, and I remember thinking, how is this guy not playing on another team in the NHL? He's playing 24 minutes a game for the Stanley Cup champions, and he played the previous 2 years in the minors. So each guy that came there understood, I just have to do my job. I have to practice as hard as Curry and Coffey and Messier, and I got a chance to play on a really good team. And so the success of our team started with Glenn, because Glenn made every guy feel important. And then it went to Lee Fogelin and guys like Mark and Kevin Lowe. Every guy who came there would always tell you to a man, this is so different than I thought it was going to be, because our image and our reputation was that it was an arrogant group of guys and it was tough to fit in. And that was so the opposite.
I've got just one more quick question before I turn you back over to Deitch. I don't know if you get asked this, but I'm a WHA fan. I grew up watching the Jets. Ulf Nilsson was one of my favorite players. What memorabilia do you have from your time with the Indianapolis Racers?
Not a whole lot. Maybe a hockey stick. The trainer,
okay.
I remember I got trained, and my dad said, grab your jerseys. I went to grab the jerseys, and the trainer said, no, I got them. I'll send them to you. Well, he ended up selling them, and some guy bought them, and actually I just signed both jerseys for a collector about a year ago, so I don't have a whole lot. But I remember the first day I walked into a locker room in Edmonton, and Glenn Sather said to me, we're going to design a team like the Winnipeg Jets. Hull, Nielsen, Hedberg, that's the kind of team I want. A year from now, we're going to be in the National Hockey League. One day, you're going to be the captain of this team, and one day, we're going to win the Stanley Cup. And here I'm thinking, my gosh, I just want to play a game in the WHA. And before I left his office, I was already lifting the Stanley Cup. So Glenn had a vision of what he wanted. He really believed that he could build a team similar to that of the Winnipeg Jets of the 70s. And my goodness, he went on to do it. And in those days, each WHA team could protect two players going in to the next season. And Glenn protected myself. And then he had a tough decision. It was either Dave Langevin, who had just come on to be a great defenseman, who ended up going to the Islanders and winning four cups, or a kid named Bent Gustafson. And he wanted Bent Gustafson and myself to play together. And he felt like he could build, that was the starting blocks to build a team like the Winnipeg Jets. Well, unfortunately, there was a rule that came down. We didn't own Gustafson. He ended up going to Washington. So we were the only team of the four that went into the next season with only one guy protected. All the other teams had two. So he knew from day one the vision that he wanted for his hockey club.
Wayne, you can relate to this, and probably one of the few people on earth who can. I'm curious, as a sports fan, what's your viewpoint is of Tom Brady after playing for the Patriots for two decades, now moving to a new team?
Oh, I'm probably as surprised as all you guys. You go, wow. You know what? Who knows? Listen, after 20 years and 9 championship games and 6 championships, you know, he's earned the right to become a free agent. It looks like he decided that he wanted to go to a different organization and try something new and unique. It'll be different for him, but he is a leader and he's a hard worker, and I'm sure he's gone to a good organization. And, you know, Belichick is known to be one of the greatest coaches in all of sports. So hopefully it works out for both organizations. But it's something new for all of us as fans to watch, and it's exciting to see. And I can't wait for hopefully game one. Hopefully all this pandemic gets behind us and we can start moving on in life.
Hey, Wayne, I got one last question for you. We're rerunning classic hockey games to fill the time. And game 6, 93, Kings-Leafs. You probably remember that game. And you probably know what I'm going to ask you. But what was going through your head in overtime when Doug Gilmour's chin started to bleed?
Oh, for sure. I thought I was going to get a penalty. You know, it was one of those things at that time the rule was, you know, even if it's accidental, you're going to be penalized. I was probably as surprised as anyone that I wasn't penalized. But as years have gone by and time has gone on, I always tell people the same story. Game one against Calgary in the Stanley Cup playoffs that year, we were playing against Calgary, and Joel Otto, on a faceoff, as I turned, cross-checked me in the rib, broke my rib, and I played the whole playoffs with a broken rib. I wore a flak jacket, and every time it was 7:30, the doctor would come in and put a needle in my leg, and I used to tease him. I'd say, make sure that freezing doesn't go south, or I'm not going to be able to skate. And he'd freeze my side, and I played the whole playoffs with basically numbing my cracked rib. After the games, some nights it was excruciating pain. And I always say, listen, I got cross-checked and it could have been a 5-minute major. I accidentally clipped a guy. That's just part of sports. And you know what? We all have to deal with it. And sometimes we don't like the outcome.
Wayne, listen, this has been a real pleasure for us and for our listeners as well, I'm sure. Thanks so much for your time. We really do wish, you know, you and yours the very best during this time. And please extend our best wishes as well to your father when you're talking to him.
Well, thank you, and hopefully put some smiles on people's faces today, and everybody be safe, and let's hopefully we can get all through this with as few problems as possible. You guys have a great day.